So this is a huge public health innovation. It's going to solve the decision-making problems for the vast majority of women. And in the higher risk or more atypical situations, we still have to put our thinking caps on and make individualized decisions. And it's worth pausing and really reflecting on how cool that really is. So in my professional lifespan, the two most important innovations in early stage breast cancer have been anti-HER2 treatments for that subset of HER2 positive disease, which has really transformed all of our thinking about breast cancer in general and HER2 positive breast cancer in particular, which went from worst to first, right? So it went from being the most aggressive virulent form of breast cancer to being the kind that women want to have if you have breast cancer because it's so successfully treated. And then the second has been the ability to use biology and these genomic tests in particular to avoid giving chemotherapy to all women with ER positive breast cancer. It's an extraordinary accomplishment. It took decades worth of work by investigators all over the world, and yet it has been fully accepted and really has transformed the management for the vast majority of patients in the U.S. I think there's still debates. There are debates in Europe about whether you actually need the genomic test or whether you can simply rely on traditional pathology to make those same choices. I think there's a whole dialogue to that. At the moment, I don't think we can exclude the genomic tests. But it's just been transformative in terms of how we think about what a woman needs. And the key point there was you had to get to the point where you said to a patient, there is no benefit for chemotherapy. The dilemma has always been if you were left saying there could be a little bit or there might be a little bit or perhaps there's some benefit for chemo, most women will pursue chemotherapy even for really small benefits. And it was the capacity to look the patient in the eye and say there is no benefit to chemotherapy that allows one to successfully avoid it in the clinic.
And, you know, I guess the other issue, too, is up until the Taylor X study, the only really prospective trial we had was that MINDEC trial with the 70-gene assay. It kind of seems like the way all these things evolve, not just in breast cancer, but in general, it's like your assay is as good as your data, sort of. Do you think there's a rationale to use any of the other assays beyond the recurrence score at this point?
So the recurrence score is our default assay, and we certainly see patients who've had other tests done, but it's the one we prefer to use. No one's done a rigorous, you know, head-to-head comparison in a prospective fashion, but in retrospective looks, the tests in general flag the same patients as being low risk or high risk. So, you know, I think the tests are more the same than they are different in who they're identifying. But my own personal interpretation is that there's just a vast resource of data built around the recurrence score test, and that's our go-to assay at this point.